get to. Let's see where he might be now, Neil O'Dowd. He could be indeed.
I'm in bed.
You're in bed. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that you might be in Irish American at my Irish American magazine, IrishCentral.com, Irish Voice newspaper, the Irish Emigrant serving the Boston area. But first of all, you're very welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Adrian. Great to hear from you again.
Let me ask you, you know, how we all, the cliche, a week is a long time in politics. Well, 24 hours appears to be a long time in politics as well, particularly with respect to the E3 visas that, you know, would be very beneficial to the Irish. Now, it sailed through the House, the U.S. Congress, and it was assumed that since there's a wink and a nod from, you know, from President Trump, and usually the wink and nod is separation there, but that since there was a, it was assumed that when it goes to the Senate, as in fact it's on its way to the Senate, that Republicans and Democrats alike would just roll in behind this, and it would give an opportunity, unfortunately not for those who are undocumented here, but for those in Ireland who may want to come to the United States. But there's a wrinkle, according to, of course, you wrote about it in today on Irish Central today. Whereas we thought, Neil, this might be, you know, a breeze through, not so.
No, not at all, Adrian. Six Republican senators have placed a hold on the E3 bill in the Senate. This is unexpected. It's not necessarily fatal, but I think you and I, with all our long-time experience, will begin to wonder, is it here we go again? Because we faced this before, where we got an immigration bill through the Senate the last time, and then it foundered in the House when John Boehner wouldn't put it up. What's happened is that six Republicans have indicated that they either want to look at the bill to see what it's about, or, which I suspect is probably the real reason, they have they want something for their vote. But in the case of one of them, which I know for a fact, the senator from Georgia, Johnny Isaacson, he's trying to bring South Korea into the deal, which would be a fatal blow. There's only 10,500 visas. Australia claims half of them. We would probably get about 5,000, but the great news about that is it would also include spouses and people who would would be married. So it would be a great bill in terms of what we call future flow. Would not help the undocumented right now, but that's not to say if you've got a proper ambassador in Dublin that issues like waivers for undocumented, allowing them to be part in this program, could happen.
You know, Neil, as you correctly pointed out, we've had so many, you know, flares through the years with respect to we're almost there. Yes, there will be, you know, special consideration, you know, for the Irish based on their contribution to the building of the United States. And they have all fizzled. Let me just ask you, though, if there's, here's a long shot, but knowing that, you know, President Trump, you know, I wouldn't say he actually wants it, he doesn't stay up at night worried about it, but he seems to indicate that this will be an easy one based on the fact that we're not talking about new visas, we're talking about unused visas that were that, you know, were assigned to Australians to the tune of you know, 10,500. Half of them anyway are not used. So it's not again contrary to you know, the obvious, distaste that the president has for any immigrants and the southern border with Mexico and whatever. Can, you know, our mothers might have said to us in growing up, you know, are these six maybe looking for notice? <You know?
laughs> They could be looking for something. They could be looking for some quid pro quo where they would get something in return for their vote. I know the names of the six. None of them are very prominent names in Republican politics. The fascinating thing about this, Adrian, is when I went to the Senate, I know the real concern was that it would be a Democratic senator, probably a Hispanic or someone like that who would take offense and not want any visas to go to Ireland.
Right.
In fact, Chuck Schumer has done a remarkable job. All the concern was Chuck Schumer wouldn't be able to get his side together. Chuck Schumer has got his side together. 49 Democrats have signed off. But it's these six Republicans. And it's very hard to read, as you know, the signals from within the Senate at any time because there's so much horse trading going on. This may be serious. It may not be. They may just be looking for more information, or they may be looking to trade something in return for voting for it. But either way, it's a worrying development because, last week a lot of people were counting the chickens. And you know what the chickens are like, Adrian. They never stay in the coop on this issue.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to call it right now. But where I would have been very optimistic last week, I'm certainly not as optimistic this weekend. I feel like this is a rerun of what you and I talked about for the last 30 years, where we thought we had something and, didn't happen.
Yeah. It does, we know, speaking of quid pro quo, that this is not just a gift to us, that there is a trade-off, and that the current rules with respect to not only Irish nationals returning to Ireland from the United States, but people in general, a lot of Irish Americans, indeed a lot of non-Irish Irish Americans, who want to retire or move back to Ireland, have, in spite of the fact that the Irish government has made the appeal and said, come on back, we'll take care of you. There are a number of stumbling blocks there, which the government of Ireland is absolutely prepared to ease up or to eliminate, to make it easy for Americans to go to Ireland, to work in Ireland, and to retire in Ireland. So it's not a for nothing.
I think that's a very important point you bring up. And, you know, you don't often hear me give credit to President Trump, but on this issue, I think he made a statement during a meeting in March with Leo Varadkar at the White House that he would be as helpful as possible. And every indication is that the White House has been very helpful. Two people in particular, Adrian, Mick Mulvaney, who's a cabinet officer at the Office of Management and Budget, and the Chief of Staff, John Kelly, have really worked hard on this. And I would still think that given Trump's support, that it's very possible that it could work out. But, you know, it's very murky because nobody expected, maybe one or two I thought would come forward, but nobody expected a high number like six.
Let's move on to an easy topic.
Mayo's All-Ireland win last year?
Excuse me. Let me just tell you now. Okay, wise guy. We have, first of all, Mayo's going to walk away with it in 2019.
Yeah, you got the same manager who lost every final before the other guy lost.
Very good. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, if we knew exactly what county you came from.
I'm from three different counties.
That's what I'm saying. You come from three different counties.
So all three won all Ireland's.
When?
1957, 1907, I can't remember the other one.
Yeah.
But, we need three counties, but Mayo, I know, will win this year. They'll definitely win the Camogie.
All right. Well, be careful now what you say, because it so happens, you know, that my cousin Brian O'Dwyer is now the Grand
Marshal
elect. And you and your marching group from three different counties could be coming up with in candlelight. So I'm just throwing it out there.
We'll get a lift from the garbage truck.
Neil, on a topic that is at best confusing to us and I'm sure to other people throughout the world, Brexit and its effect on Ireland, on Northern Ireland. It is so difficult to follow or indeed to analyze. Now it's only, you know, a few months left to put this, to get this thing straightened out. It's hard to know where we are, and are we being naive in thinking that Brexit, which is controversial in the first place, is totally dependent, or for some of us from Ireland would say, well, we're holding the trump card here, excuse the expression. But how significant and how much of the Brexit deal with the European Union, how much of that will be is depending on working out, a free trade agreement with Northern Ireland?
It's completely dependent on it, because it's the one aspect of this agreement that the European Union has agreed Ireland must have what we call a backstop. There can be no return to a hard border in terms of installations or soldiers or barbed wire or walls or anything to do with journeying between north and south. That's a fundamental issue about the peace process, about the Good Friday Agreement, which is an international agreement. And the European leaders, to a man and a woman, have stood up and said, yes, that is correct. There will be no hard border. The other thing that's happening, Adrian, probably the only positive thing about Brexit, I think it actually brings the United Ireland much closer. There's a number of people on the unionist side who are saying, you know what, our voices are not being heard here, the Democratic Unionist Party. Remember, Northern Ireland voted to stay in Europe, but the way it's been represented in Parliament is that it's totally against staying in Europe. And there's 56% of the people who voted for Brexit who are now saying, you know what, staying in the European Union is actually much more important for us than staying part of the United Kingdom, because they're not listening to us anyway. So there's a number of issues. There's one today where a lot of high schoolers were asked a question, Protestant and Catholic, and an awful lot of them said that they would prefer United Ireland than getting out of Europe. So, you know, there's a lot of positive trends in that one issue. But apart from that, I can't think of a single good thing that will happen because of Brexit, either to Britain or to Ireland or to the Europeans.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that if we believe the already agreed to deal with respect to never more having a border in Northern Ireland, there's no backseas on this one. Nobody can say, well, listen, let's discuss that part again.
No, in fact, you're a very good friend, Michael Bloomberg, I think, put it best of anyone. He said, I thought there'd never be anything as stupid as electing Donald Trump until the British passed Brexit. So, I mean, you're looking at just a horrific situation, which was totally self-inflicted, where David Cameron was the Prime Minister, had a majority. Everything was calm, everything was good, there was no talk of Brexit other than from a small group. So he decided that he would defeat this small group, somewhat like the Tea Party here in America, who were really annoying him. So he ran a referendum, and of course, when you run a referendum, people always take the opportunity to screw it up, because there's nothing, you're not voting for a Member of Parliament or something significant. So the English, against all the odds, voted for Brexit, which is where we got this incredible mess and unnecessary referendum on something that most people didn't really think that much about. So what you're looking at is the whole issue, Adrian. I know this comes back to immigration.
Mm-hmm.
The reason Brexit passed was the British do not want third world immigration into England. That was the fundamental underlying vote, because people were very worried about the level of immigration coming through Europe. That issue hasn't gone away either, and it's another complication in this whole Brexit thing. But if you're looking at the best possible solution, I think the only solution which the Labour Party has finally come around to is to rerun the referendums. Crazy and all as that sounds, I think if the British got a chance, they'd make a much more sensible decision this time.
When we speak of Northern Ireland, and when we talk about this extraordinarily important period where Northern Ireland and indeed Northern Ireland, and we spent 800 years complaining about how but in addition to that, and your three counties, which you're doing, a fact check on here, and you're not coming out too good out of
it. Well, it's actually the three pubs in Bohol.
Yeah. But Neil, take us back, at least briefly, to America's involvement, and indeed you being one of the key negotiators for the Good Friday Agreement. And when, I'm sure nobody asks you, but I will, why and how do you reconcile, or how do you feel now about the fact that finally Ireland, Northern Ireland, got its own government, and somehow many would say through pure thickness, just let it roll away, and how do does Northern Ireland expect that their voices will be heard, and where is their clout with Brexit when, in fact, they don't have a government?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of issues there, Edwin, you're referring to. Like, 21 years ago yesterday, Bill Clinton was in Belfast in the most historic trip to Ireland ever by an American president, with the possible exception of John F. Kennedy's trip. And that was the turning point in the peace process, when everybody saw that the American president was 100% committed to working with both sides in that conflict to bring about what ultimately became the Good Friday Agreement. It was after that visit that he decided that George Mitchell should be the man in charge of the negotiations from the American side, which was a profoundly important step.
Yeah.
It was after that trip that he personally said to Nancy Soderberg that he wanted to be kept briefed at least twice a week on the Irish issue. And you suddenly went from hundreds of years of where Ireland was not an issue, except for some blarney and shamrocks on St. Patrick's Day, to an American president getting deeply involved. And 21 years ago yesterday, Adrian, you know, we all stood in Belfast on the main street there, opposite the City Hall, and saw Van Morrison sing There'll be days like this. Well, there never was any day like this. In my political life and my life as a journalist, I thought that was one of the greatest days I ever witnessed, to see a president of the United States proudly walk onto the stage and basically set in motion something that people had said was impossible, which was peace in Northern Ireland. Having said that, you know, fast forward 21 years and you have this bad-tempered, unsatisfactory deadlock in Northern Ireland. And your point is a very good one, because you have the DUP allegedly representing Northern Ireland on Brexit. But if you look at the vote, 56% of the people, which meant a hell of a lot of unionists, voted to stay in the EU. But their voices are not being heard. And frankly, you know, they need to find a way. The war is over. I know that Arlene Foster is not the greatest unionist leader by a long shot. She doesn't have the ability or the power that Paisley and Robinson had ultimately to do deals, and that's very obvious. And I actually think the same thing happens on the Republican side. We've lost Martin McGuinness. I think that was the worst loss of the last 21 years.
Yeah.
Martin McGuinness was the guy who crossed over to the other side, who shook hands with Ian Paisley, who sat down with Ian Paisley, who kept that government going through thick and thin, and I think he's a profound loss at a time like this when you need leadership. And that's not to, you know, cast aspersions on the current leadership in Sinn Féin, but it's just not possible to replicate Martin McGuinness. In other words, what I'm saying is,
yeah,
I don't think we'd be where we are if Martin was around.
Well, we agree. He's not, and it is a mess. But again, if this goes wrong, I think that, you know, that the world will look at Northern Ireland and say, well, they brought it on themselves because they wouldn't get their act together anyway. And things would be different. Will that ring a bell, would you say? Do you think that maybe one of these days that both sides there will wake up and say, listen, okay, wait, let's get
well, you know, the big thing, Adrian, that you have to keep an eye on now is demographics. In the last two elections in Northern Ireland, the unionist vote was a minority vote.
Yeah.
But in 20 years, there will be a nationalist majority of about 54% as against 46% in Northern Ireland. In other words, if you're a unionist, you're looking down the barrel of the reality that within your children's lifetime, there will be more nationalists than unionists in Northern Ireland. And what you should be doing is, when you're still in the position of strength, is working with the other side, working out a deal, working out, as Peter Robinson has very bravely said, the whole apparatus and how that might work in terms of a government, a 32-county Ireland, an unpartitioned Ireland, or some kind of federal arrangement with Northern Ireland. You should be doing that rather than trying to insult the voters,
right,
trying to insult nationalists like they are doing and claiming that they represent the whole province, which they don't. So I think demographics is destiny in Northern Ireland. There's no question in my mind that your kids and grandkids will see United Ireland. I really wouldn't have said that, Adrian, 5 years ago.
5 years ago, you wouldn't even have brought it up because it would be considered to be really, you know, spilling the petrol on the fire. But I think reality has kicked in since that time. And, you know, if you go back again to the Good Friday Agreement, who would have thought 21 years ago that the day would come when it would be a practical consideration, which is turning out to be, and that you know, it's that this is coming.
Yeah.
And I think there is an awareness in Northern Ireland that this is coming, whether it's soon or 20 years or whatever.
I think it's a big game changer. You're absolutely right. There's a practical reality now, because, you know, we all sort of belted the drum and say, you know, there'll be United Ireland in our lifetime. I don't think we ever actually believed it, Adrian, in our hearts. But when you look at the fact that the Good Friday Agreement does factor in a border poll every generation, in other words, if you took a border poll in 2024, would people vote in the north for United Ireland? I think there's a very good chance they would, given the fact that the unionists are making no attempt to sit down with the nationalists and work out a system of government that would head off, you know, a full United Ireland or make them part of a thing much more fully. Right now, they're acting like they're still, you know, the same power that they were 50 years ago, that they're the only voice that counts. Well, guess what? The ballot box is saying something very different now.
Yeah. Well, we can definitely hope. Is the deadline... is that a movable feast? You know, in terms of there has to be you know, a program in place with respect to Brexit in the next few months. Can that be kind of dragged out?
I think it has to be. I mean, if you look at the success of the Good Friday Agreement, a lot of it was George Mitchell kicking cans down the road as far as he could until he had to face them. It was a very, very different reality then, you know, because the issues were hugely important, like decommissioning. You couldn't deal with them all together, in other words. Mm. And it's the same with Brexit. If you were to put aside the March 29, 2019 deadline, what exactly would it mean? Nothing except to give people more time to cop onto themselves and realize that they're in a very serious situation that needs to be negotiated, not throwing rocks at each other.
Yeah. Can we, dare I mention the fact that, that as you know, and you were very involved in the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement, but you had a president of the United States who actually, showed up, and that was the ringing endorsement which brought around the Good Friday Agreement. Is it significant, or would a miracle of all miracles happen? Let's say that the current administration, or Trump, decided, if only by way of diversion from some other stuff.
Well, there's certainly enough of the other stuff, isn't
Yeah, but would it, is it too little too late to expect that maybe there's another George Mitchell around somewhere who can pull something out of the cold? And if so, who might that be?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the, in terms of our discussions over the years, we talked about George Mitchell an awful lot. But your listeners know that following George Mitchell, there was Richard Haass. There were people who contributed mightily to the peace process who weren't part of the original team. But there's no doubt in my mind that there are people capable in the Trump administration of playing a role, or people that he could appoint who could play a role. It's always good to have America at the table. That's the lesson of the Irish peace process. And if you don't learn that lesson and repeat it, even George Bush's appointees, I mean, the point being that it doesn't necessarily have to be a George Mitchell. It can be somebody who can just play that role of putting people in a room, settling them down, and saying to them straight, look, we're not going to leave this room till we get some kind of a deal. Gary Hart had been doing a very good job with Obama when Obama was president. And I would very much welcome a representative similar to, Richard Haass or someone like that, who would make a big difference, in my opinion.
Well, the time is right, and who knows? Again, we keep our fingers crossed, and from your lips to God's ears, something may shake out.
The funny thing, Adrian, is we've done all the hard work. It's like immigration. We've done all the hard work. We have it ready, and if we screw it up now, it's just unthinkable in my mind.
Yeah.
Unthinkable.
Well, nothing like ending on a positive note, Alan. Thank you very much for dragging me. I particularly want to thank you for dragging me down with you. Okay, Neil O'Dowd, thank you.
It was fun.
Okay.
As long as Brian has the Sam McGuire going up 6,000, I'll be right behind him.
Yeah, okay, very good. You're down at the end. Last group. Okay, thank you. Van Morrison, friends, and the song that Neil referred to, the song that was rolled out when President Bill Clinton indeed arrived, in Ireland on that very significant day, 21 years ago.